I will call the meeting to order, and we'll start with Representative Kalin. We don't have a quorum, obviously, so we'll have to do the minutes after your bill. But we do want to make sure that we get in all the time. We have your bill that we don't actually have in possession of the committee, so we can't move it. But we want to hear about it. We heard about Representative Saylor's bills yesterday, and this kind of lends itself to the same sort of good topic. And we are planning to have your bill for 15 or 20 minutes. Right. And I know you have two or three testifiers, so that's why I want to start right on the dot so you get all your full time. So welcome.
Great. Thank you very much, Madam Chair. And I think the testifiers are here to answer questions, so I don't know that we'll need to bring them to the table unless there are questions, but you know, in this intimate setting, I'll say hello to Representatives Ward, Tilbury, and Biskin.
they get stars, they're on time.
Are we doing this? Oh, great, there we go. And then, there we go. I'll figure that out in a second here, but and we're making copies of this document for your review and then personally, House File 680.
You see a thing.
Okay, I'll make it. We'll do this for now, and I'll make it work when it's time.
Okay.
House File 680 is a very brief overview. It's a green job bill to put Minnesotans to work using the federal recovery dollars. The three components of the bill, a very quick overview again, are focused on low-income weatherization, so weatherizing and tightening up the homes for the working poor. The qualification is 50% below poverty line. There's actually 400,000 Minnesota households that are income eligible. It's a stunning figure, and we only serve 165,000 of those eligible households with heating assistance. This $131 million from the federal government, where traditionally we get $10 million, will allow us to move from about 4,000 homes to about 20,000, roughly, and do more with each of those homes. The sections 4 and 5 of the bill are really the section 4 is the key provision for this committee. The other thing we're focused on, in addition to the weatherization, is renovating and making more efficient our public buildings, including our schools. Madam Chair, as you know, we have a lot of schools in this state where the physical facilities are not efficient from an energy perspective, and they're certainly not in their prime learning environment. We have $54 million coming from the feds for the state energy program, and the next hearing in this, for this bill formally will be next Wednesday in the Energy Committee, where we'll be discussing the allocation of that $54 million. My hope is that a significant portion of that money can be used to seed projects for our school districts, our city halls, and our state government buildings. And this, that use of those funds, let's see if we can do...
Now, Mr. Representative Kalin, we actually have our own copy.
Oh, great. Excellent. Well, I'll do this so the public can see as well. Last year, we passed a bill that set up tax-exempt lease purchase financing for energy efficiency projects for our public buildings, our schools. In essence, as you can see, if a total project costs $100,000 to, let's say, upgrade some windows, do some lighting replacement to make the lighting more energy efficient, and then to replace a very old furnace with an energy efficient furnace, if that might cost $100,000 and the total payback might be 5 years, the school district will actually pay the same energy bill for 5 years as they did the year before the project, because the energy savings, each of those 5 years, that $20,000 savings, is the payment for that upfront capital. We have a state escrow fund that guarantees that if the Roseville School District experiences some fault with the equipment or something else that happens that's totally out of the ordinary, that the school district is insulated from, pardon the pun, but it's insulated from a higher energy bill because of paying for that manufacturer default, or let's say an extremely cold winter that that the efficiency project can't pay back. So it's a net zero benefit for the 5 years, and then after year five, that $20,000 savings will be pocketed by the school district through lower cost. What we're going to be using the federal stimulus dollars rather than just take that $100,000 and give out a $40,000 grant, under this bill, that would be the maximum grant, would be a 40% grant. The benefit to the school district is, as you can see, an $8,700 cash flow. So that's this figure here on the second second illustration there. What we're hoping to do is to then increase the net energy savings up to $54,000. I'm sorry, I actually just got this chart, so I'm working on understanding it myself here. But as you see, the net energy savings over the life of that of the project will increase from $40,000 under the existing law to $54,000. And the goal here is that the local schools have skin in the game, that we reduce energy bills beyond that zero, that's the existing term, and that we move as many school districts off the dime to do projects within the time frame of the federal stimulus dollars, the next 18 months. I think this is a fantastic opportunity to improve the learning environment for our students, contribute to the energy health of the state and energy independence, to engage the students in those projects. I hope that our teachers will continue to use these opportunities to really engage students in the energy management of their classrooms. Most importantly, to put Minnesotans back to work. And as you know, Madam Chair, I share your commitment to funding reform and to really make that happen for our school system. We need to have a vibrant economy. And that's really the focus of this bill, that there are benefits across the board. I'm sure the members have questions about the finance question, or also how we're going to make sure that school districts have equal access across the state, to make sure that every school district is eligible and that the engineered projects that are ready to go can rock and roll.
And Representative Kalin, it looks like, or just reading the bill, it looks like the department will be fleshing out a lot of the details on prioritization and procedures and things.
Yeah.
Is that right?
That's correct, Madam Chair. The Office of Energy Security are the recipients of the funds, because these are the energy portion of the stimulus. Representative Rickavine and the committee just before that formally heard the bill asked me about these joint plans and joint procedures, how long is that going to take? And I actually said, well, most of that's happening now. It's a little bit like directing them to do what they're already doing. The Department of Education and Charlie Kites and the school district, the superintendents and others, we've been meeting, I think, as early as the second or third week of January, starting to talk about how to make this process work and make it equitable. So I do believe it's the office and the department together that are going to work closely.
Very good. Representative Newton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I know when I was on the Coon Rapids City Council, we had a contract with Honeywell, and they did an efficiency program where they guaranteed that they would keep the cost of electric and everything else down, heating down to a certain minimum. How would you deal with districts that have engaged with organizations like 3M that have that sort of system, Jeremy?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Newman, they actually worked very closely with Honeywell in setting up that tax-exempt lease purchase mechanism. You see them described on the handout as PD, the Public Building Enhanced Energy Efficiency Program. And it's modeled after the same energy service contract that Honeywell and Johnson Controls and others perform for our schools today. This actually allows, well, Johnson Controls has run up against a problem that Honeywell is running up against probably next year in having adequately trained workforce, specifically around energy system technicians and energy engineers. The need is so great that even if Johnson Controls and Honeywell could access all the workers that they wanted to, that there would be hundreds of school buildings around the state that are not currently being addressed. And that was really motivation for our initial process. So for initial bill, Honeywell and Johnson Controls will continue to have a vigorous and vibrant business. I think we'll only get even more so as we increase energy capacity, hopefully starting with our students as well.
Yeah. Just a brief follow-up, Madam Chair, and this is based on a conversation I had 2 days ago with Dwayne Ahrens, who's a representative for Conexus, he told me that next year the energy costs are going up 10%, and they're going to do the same for the 2 years following that. So it'll be roughly a 35% increase in energy costs for homes and businesses. So anything we can do to save money is really good. Thank you
very much. Representative McFarland.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We were just hearing this bill in higher ed and workforce development before it came here, and we used a different engrossment. We did some amendments also, and I do recall that we added the Department of Education into one of the sections, and I thought maybe you could confirm that and tell people more about that.
I can, Madam Chair, Representative McFarland. On what should be page 2, line 20, it's subdivision 2, paragraph 1, the project administrators list. I don't know if that shows up as exactly an engrossment. You have...
We have a February 9th. I think we have the original bill, actually.
Oh, I'm sorry that you don't have the it is significantly changed from that original engrossment.
Representative Kalin, the staff is going to go and get that bill. So.
Great.
So we'll have it before we get done here.
But I can address Representative McFarland's question. Generally, the project administrators, the direction for the project administrators to maximize job retention and creation, and then number 2, to optimize energy conservation. And project administrators, because the funding goes directly to the Office of Energy Security, had originally only been listed as OES. We added DEED, administration, education, and MHSA. So they're all working very well together right now.
Thank you. I just wanted to clarify.
Great. I appreciate that.
Thank you, Representative McFarland. I'm guessing by the time we actually get the engrossment, we'll be done with this bill, but then the members can look at it and study it while we're going through the Labor Day amendment later on. I'm sure we'll have time.
And if I could, Madam Chair?
Representative Kalin.
I would pledge to work with members all the way through the end of the Labor Day conciliation, but I think I won't do that. I think I will pledge to work with members until this bill is finished off the House floor. And so any questions at any time, I encourage you to come and talk to me. I'm hoping by the time we reach the floor, every single member in this body will have seen it in a committee. But.
Thank you very much. We are so glad you're working on it, and I think Representative Newton summed it up very well that we, and you did as well, that we need our economy going, and we need our schools to be efficient, saving money that way, and then also the jobs that these kind of improvements can provide. So do you have any closing statements for us before you head off to whatever the next committee is?
Well, Madam Chair, I think that the recovery bill and the stimulus dollars are an incredible opportunity to make a down payment on a more vibrant and more energy secure economy. And I'm really proud to be before this committee because I do believe, as Johnson Controls has experienced and others, that the workforce of the future needs to be energy savvy and needs to be engaged in resolving these issues. This is the next space race. And I hope that this committee will continue to be engaged in working with our teachers and our schools around the state to not only make the buildings models of energy performance, but the students themselves engaged in those projects. And I'm hoping that when we have my discussion about testing reform, that we can actually talk about making space in the school year for more of those hands-on experiential projects.
Nice segue for when you return. So thank you, Representative Kalin.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair and members.
Representative Tilbury. And Representative Tilbury, since you are a member of this committee, you can move your own bill.
Great. I would like to move House File 920 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Representative Tilbury, move House File 920 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Please walk us through your bill.
And one other thing, if I could, I have one amendment, which is the 920A4 amendment.
Now, is that one, Representative Tilbury, that's the technical amendment?
Yeah.
Okay, let's do that one first then to get it in the shape that you want. Would you move that amendment, please?
Yes, if I could move 920A4 amendment.
Just this stuff here. It's technical, okay. Representative Tilbury moves H0920. A4. It's substantive. All it looks like to me is it's changing this stuff up here, but that's... Oh, there it is. Oh, Rift and Tilbury. Actually, this one is one we... It's a substantive one. I was just noticing the changes on 1.1 and 1.2, but the rest of it down below, because it is... a big change, apparently. We need to discuss that one as we go through. We just do the technical author's amendments, or if it's a delete all. So let's just take, would you remove that one, please, and then we can take it later.
So then we would not want the, then you're saying that we should not want the A4 amendment at this time? Is that what you're
saying? If you could withdraw it, and we'll go through
I will withdraw it.
Okay. Representative Tilbury withdraws the A4 amendment, and we'll take it first, though, after you've walked through the bill and had your testifiers.
Okay.
So.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The first thing that I want to do is thank the work group members, and I also want to thank Representative Greiling for allowing me the opportunity to do this. But the work group members happen to be Representative Benson, Brown, Detmer, Depke, Morgan, and Ward. And we all know that Representative Benson tried his hardest to get out of this committee work.
Yeah.
So just want that for the record, of course.
And, of course, for the record, I think...
Madam Chair, did I hear an explosion? I was concentrating on this amendment at the moment.
I think Representative Tilbury was accusing you of going off and having open-heart surgery so you didn't have to chair the mandate reduction committee.
That was actually the reason I did it. I will confess.
Representative Tilbury.
Well, and I tried my hardest, Madam Chair, to also get off of that part because I went into the hospital the week after for kidney stones. But, you know, Representative Tilbury said he wanted to, you know, turn every stone. I thought that might help.
Beware of the next person that chairs this subcommittee working group.
But to get on, I just wanted to talk about the process that the work group took. They took the requests from various organizations that we're all familiar with, School Board Association, MASBO, for example, but several others that were involved with all of these. They suggested over 100 different mandates that they would like repealed. And so the work group focused on a method that we thought would work to get to the choices, to get us a good, healthy start on the mandate reduction within the limited time constraints that we had. We used an approach to agree to these items for evaluation. The first one that we used was, would it be savings to districts? We wanted to know that. The second one, if it referred to any type of contractual agreement or something, we chose not to pursue that at this time. And then also the third part, in the case of special ed, we deferred those mandates to the task force as not to duplicate their work, and we had that task force come talk about their situation with special ed. And then also, if there happened to be a bill that was traveling on its own, we didn't pick that up at that time. The work group came over, looked at all this through about 6 different meetings, and considered about 24 of the mandates. After we got to the 24, we realized quickly that we couldn't fully repeal these. We needed to possibly amend them. And so that was where we went with that. We then sent out to an assorted number of superintendents, and there's no secret to how we found these. It was whoever was on our committee, a work group. We decided to talk to our own superintendents, which seemed to be a very good sample because they're from all over. And so we did that and asked for them to give us positive and negatives of what would happen if this was either repealed or amended. And they also needed to tell us how much money they might save based on the mandates of these 24. Then as chair, I just submitted the House File 920 prior to the education policy that only had 4 of these listed because we knew those were simple and easy or innocuous and not controversial. And then what we did is we had 2 public meetings to talk about the remaining 20. And then at that point, the work group decided to put this thing together. We put some amendments from this work group onto the piece in policy, and then that is what we're bringing to you today. And that is House File 920. So if we go through the bill itself, I think if you follow along, and Ms. Larson and Tim Strom did a great job of putting the research together in their summary that you have, and I think that that's a good way to look at it. If you look at the section number one, the required academic standards, this was a controversial piece that the work group had difficulty with, but it does reduce the number of art offerings K-12 schools must provide, and we chose to have it coincide with the requirements that exist. Now, for metro schools, you know, their choices were to have five areas, and you're supposed to have art requirements within those four or five areas. And we found that the rural areas are really struggling with this particular mandate due to the different offerings that they have to have. And so that is the reason for this change to take place. If we move to section number two, this happens to be a report that the school board needs to do. It's pretty technical in nature in most cases, and we moved for that to be removed. Number three, budgets or formal notification. This is the publishing of things. Instead of having all of the notice take place in the newspaper, we had a summary that would be in the truth and taxation piece rather than that. Number four, it also looked at striking language requiring superintendents to annually report, identifying the expenditures the district needed to take for the MCAs. Number five, the health and safety program, it eliminated the requirement that health and safety projects with a value in excess of $500,000 be transferred from the health and safety program into the alternative facilities program. Number five and number six, and also number seven, were the department was pretty neutral on all of those three. And if you look at number seven, for example, that just moved $500,000 to $1.4 million to get it in today's dollars rather than yesteryear's. If you look at number eight, expenditures by building was very cumbersome for school districts, but yet it was important information. But we figured let's even it out and just report what the UFARs, or what they call the Uniform Financial and Reporting Standards. So that's what the amendment that would happen for that. Number nine, this also dealt with pupil enrollment. We had agreement with some of the stakeholders that spent the weekend after our work group to decide how this should be written and how this should work, and they came up with some good language that we thought we would adopt and put in. And number 10, I'll spend a little bit of time on that one, and I guess I'll do that because I want to say Minnesota Miracle several times in that, as many times as I can.
All the time you want.
Yep. And so as I start out with that, I want to say that the Safe Schools Levy for the work group, I think they heard school counselors about as many times as we've heard Minnesota Miracle. And so I wanted to just mention, we did do some language change rather than repeal this particular piece. And the piece that we wanted to maintain was the maintenance of effort to still be included within that. But we also wanted to give you an example where some school districts would say there was a retirement and someone was making $70,000 a year. Rather than make it a dollar for dollar change, we wanted to make it at least the positions. And so I just wanted to mention that the reason this particular maintenance of effort was put in to begin with was because we are 50th in the nation as far as the student to counselor ratio, and I don't know how far we could go to become 51st, because the District of Columbia is 51st, but I don't know if that's a real good statement to be making. And so I think it's that important. And then one piece I wanted to share about this particular levy, we had a bill that came in front of us in our committee here not too long ago. Representative Emmer came up with a bill, if you recall. It was AED test, or how to do those particular machines, and then I think it was either CPR or first aid, one or the other. I think it's first aid, where teachers could use the 2% of the staff development to be trained in that. Why I bring this up, the testifier came that he had and talked about a situation that happened with their child. The particular child fell off of a slide, broke, I believe, both arms or both wrists or whatever, and then had some other injuries, and went to the nurse's office, where the nurse's aide called home and said, you might want to come and get your child. And so they came and got the child, went to their home, and because the child was in such pain, they decided to go off to the emergency room. The nurse at the emergency room said, why didn't the nurse at school call the ambulance? This should have been taken care of long ago. And thus, Representative Emmer came with a bill saying that maybe the teachers should have had a little bit more experience with that to identify that. I want to take it one step further and say, had there been a nurse at the school that day, instead of the partial days that they might be able to, that the school district is choosing to do, that particular professional would have spotted that and probably called the ambulance right from the school, and that would have taken care of that, rather than have a nurse's aide do that. That is the piece that's important, I think, in this particular case. And since that particular event came up, I wanted to just mention that as just look a little bit further at student support services, especially in the time of this budget crisis that's happening and foreclosures on homes. I don't think the counselor's office is going to be any less busy. But I also understand, and the reason we put this particular piece in, is we understand that the mandates that we have on schools are costly. So this was kind of a compromise piece that the work group came up with. Number 11 was the notice of proposed taxes. Mentioning of the mandatory truth and taxation meetings, and it eliminated those. And if you're any, maybe former school board members can attest to the fact that nobody showed up for those meetings in most cases. So it was a lot of preparation for really nothing. Number 12 was the adoption of budget and levy eliminates the public hearing requirements that we're going to be looking at too. So number 13, this one was to, and I thought this was going to be one of the ones that was going to save the most money for districts because it would allow them the flexibility of moving from one fund to another, but we found out in our public testimony that everyone started to talk about, well, it's fine to move from one fund as long as you don't touch this fund or that fund or the other fund. And so we decided at this point, let's do what we did last year in our bill, and we have that listed at the $51 per pupil, and we wanted to maintain that or at least continue that. And then number 14 talks about the remaining ones, which we're really repealing, and those I think were something that we could look up and be in more detail. But for example, the duplicative administrators academy, for example, that was mostly the ones that were covered within my original bill that we had before we added the author's amendment. And with that, I guess I'm ready to answer any questions, and if they get too hard, I'm going to pull my work group and ask them some good questions too, in case I mess up.
Thank you very, very much, Representative Tilbury, for your work and for the work of the work group. And I think this gives us a very good set of mandates to reduce. I know that, as you said, there were many that were turned in, and this is a goodly number, much more than you had in your original. So thank you for your work. And one of your co-workers, Representative Depke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Tilbury, what is the total number of mandates that we have on this bill right now? I just think for the record it would be good for people to know how many are actually included in this particular bill.
Representative Tilbury.
And Madam Chair, Representative Depke, I believe we have 15 of them.
Thank you.
Thank you. That's a good number for all of us to know when we're talking about the bill. 15. Representative Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a quick comment. Maybe Representative Tilbury, you would repeat the number of financial savings for the District of Wayzata that you mentioned in earlier committee. I think that's useful for people when they're thinking of looking for savings.
Representative Tilbury.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Benson, thank you for bringing that up. We, when we sent out questionnaires, remember we talked about the superintendents that we had, and we told them of how much this might save. What we did is we took the mandates that we had on our final list and we added up some dollars that they put together, remembering that this isn't any type of science. It's their best guess. And Wyzetta came back with a savings of about $100,000 just through our changes alone. Now, whether that, I mean, even if you take half of that, let's just say we were all off on our figures and we were just guessing, $50,000 for one school is pretty good. So I guess I look at it as we're trying to help our school districts. I think we answered the charge.
Thank you very much. And the representative from Wyzetta, Representative Depke.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Representative Tilbury, just so that you know, there is a correction. I did talk to the district finance director of Wyzetta, went over everything with him. The figure is somewhat less than that because we did make some changes during committee, but it's still many thousands of dollars. So I think that that's a good starting point. And obviously, I think just as important for all the districts is the fact that we've reduced a lot of unnecessary, sometimes unnecessary time and effort, staff time, which wasn't even calculated in the original numbers.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Thank you. Representative Detmer.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. And also I'd like to thank President Tilbury for chairing that subcommittee, the working group, because I don't think we all realized until we got into the meat of it how many mandates there are in K-12 education. And I think we came up at 24, and it was narrowed down to 15, but it's amazing that I think our working group, we were kind of thinking maybe we should have more in there, but we came up with the number that we have. But thank you for your leadership. Mm-hmm.
And thank you for being on it. I just got to go to one part of one meeting, and I thought, the legislators that were working on this group were certainly a model for that all of us should try to emulate here in the legislature, working hard at work, working seriously, thinking of students, working bipartisanly. So it was a good group. Representative Marquardt and then Representative Brown. Representative Marquardt.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. And I also want to thank the committee and Representative Tilbury for this effort. You know, in our property tax division, we divided up three work groups, and one was headed up by Representative Lanning, which also dealt with mandate relief for counties, cities, and township. And, you know, and there are tons more that we could all put in. And I think as everyone looks at these, even on the cities and county side, you may not agree 100% with every one of them. In fact, there might be one or two I disagree with. But, you know, let's give it a try. You know, I mean, I don't think the sky is going to come falling down because we, you know, relieve a mandate. So I think in this time of really tough budgets, we need to provide schools and all these local governments with some sort of flexibility. And I, you know, one thing we also put in the division are looking at is benchmarks and are looking to do this and performance measurements and that type of thing. But school districts have that. You go onto the website and it's published a couple times a year, too, how the schools are doing on the reading and the writing and the math tests. And I'll tell you what, folks in the area look at that. So I think that coupled with what we're doing here is some really good reform pieces, Madam Chair, and that I applaud and I think we need to move forward with. And then just one other question with the truth and taxation stuff, which we've had quite a bit of debate, and that's also, it's pretty close language to what was in the one working group. Will this end up ultimately the bill coming through taxes then? And because what we can ultimately do is, rather than putting all those pieces in two bills, we could put them in one or the other and put all that together potentially. But I think we've got some really, really good stuff here in with what we have with the cities, counties, and townships. So
right. And
thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Marquardt. And actually, I should clarify my head nod there. This will be in the K-12 omnibus bill, and then that bill will go through taxes. So it might have to be in the tax bill, too, for the cities and counties. And just on the House floor today, Representative Lanchesky and I were talking, and maybe we should have you at the meeting, too, Representative Marquardt, about coordinating you know, all these various levies and suggestions and what, you know, making sure we coordinated better than we were before with taxes and K-12, because we are trying to have the K-12 subjects in this bill more than we have before. We had some things done in taxes, some in the Transportation Committee, And then this year, we're just kind of thinking of all of our stuff being in our bill and going through taxes. And Rep. Lincheski has been very good about that, and we're just trying to coordinate. So we should, let's try to remember to have you at that meeting if you're free. Thank you. Rep. Brown, and then Rep. Garofalo, Biskins, McFarland. Representative Brown.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Tilbury. And I have to apologize to you in advance. This was a committee that I was very interested in and was unable to attend the different meetings, so I'm going to be the downer. There are many, many things that I like about this, but I just need to say publicly that, you know, arts and schools have been promoted and worked on for so many years to get standards that were meaningful. And I see it as a step backwards by reducing those standards into the extent that we are here. What they teach in terms of teaching pupils cause and effect and pragmatism and creative problem solving is just so important to our students' future, their ability to make it in the workforce and be the type of workers and creators of new jobs that this portion is the one that is my least favorite. Not because I'm an art teacher, and I am. I'll say that, you know, right out loud. But the group of students that the arts benefit need these programs so deeply. And I need to say that I think that with all the years that we've worked for getting standards in our school system for the arts, this is a big step backwards.
Thank you very much. And we have three more legislators, and then we're going to take some testimony, and then we'll go to amendments. And we do have the 24-hour rule, so we have only three amendments, I think, which is testimonial to the good work that was done by the various legislators on this work group. But it is a dynamic process, as you know, in the legislature. So you could continue talking with Representative Tilbury when we mark up the bill. Of course, that's another time for more amendments. So nothing's done till it's done here. Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have just a couple of quick questions. Madam Chair, Representative Tilbury, in your testimony, I want to make sure I understood right. The criteria for what went into the bill was, number one, would it have savings? Number two, is it not contractually obligated, so you're not breaking up contract law? Three, you stayed away from special education stuff to defer judgment to the task force. And four, you didn't handle any bills that are flying by themselves. Is that correct?
Representative Tilbury.
Madam Chair, Representative Garofalo, yes, that is what I said earlier, and I'll give you an example of that last one about a bill being sent on. The work group, for example, did not want to handle the pre-Labor Day piece. We figured that Representative Norton's bill was traveling with that, and we didn't need to put it in our mandate.
Representative Garofalo.
Madam Chair, Representative Tilbury, so given those restrictions, what criteria was used to determine what was you kind of outlined those things. It seems there's a lot of other things out there that meet those criteria that are not in this bill. So what criteria was kind of used to whittle those down to the 15 versus the, I think it was 81 we were given at the beginning of session? I know that there's some overlap there. You've mapped out a couple of exclusions, but for those that don't meet the third and fourth points there, what was the criteria used?
Representative Tilbury.
Madam Chair and Representative Garofalo, some of it was hard to dictate because it didn't even meet the would it be savings to districts, for example. Some districts might report back, remember with our superintendents that I talked about that were selected, some would come back with answers that said this won't save us anything. But yet another district would report back saying this will be a substantial savings. And so I think the work group was confused with some of the things that came back to us. And then when it led to questions like that, we had a choice to make of whether or not to look at these mandates and pursue them with 4 weeks' worth of work, or would that mean more time should be taken? Because if it's controversial coming in, I don't think 4 weeks' worth of time from our work group really gave it justice. In fact, in 1993, I was told that Senator Poldemiller did one of these mandate reduction type things, and he worked the whole interim and had meetings throughout and open public meetings throughout the whole thing, and I think that was a way to go. So another criteria piece that we looked at is what did we expect out of 3.5 to 4 weeks worth of work.
And
Reverend Brathlop.
So it's correct in saying that the more controversial mandate relief measures, even though they met the criteria of saving money and they're not contractually obligated, they're not special ed, they're not in a separate bill, that the reason why those were admitted were for time's sake? I mean, because you only have a finite amount of time.
Representative Tilbury.
Madam Chair, Representative Groffalo, we had decided that we needed to do it justice. And having two public meetings to discuss all of it and trying to put it together before February 26th, that's the lead deadline that we had to meet, we just felt that as a work group, we needed to put the right amount of time in.
And Madam Chair, my last question.
Representative Groffalo.
Does this match up with SF?
Represent Scogan's bill in the Senate.
Does it match up with SF 2?
I'm sorry, can you repeat that?
Does this match up in the Senate with Senate File 2, the omnibus mandate reduction bill, or what's the Senate file?
Representative Tilbury, if the member could please go through the chair.
I'm sorry.
Madam Chair, Representative Groffalo, at this point, some of it does. Some of it does not match up with the Senate version. We went on our own way with the work group. We like our language.
Representative Biskin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just want to echo the statement made by Representative Marquardt that this isn't always easy, but sometimes you just gotta throw it out there, and the sky probably won't fall. There are pieces in here, I'll say, that gives me heartburn. The eliminating truth in taxation. Right? However, I sure represent Browns as working in a school for performing artists. Right? However, the bill doesn't say they can't hold hearings on the budget. The bill doesn't say school districts can't offer at least three of the five areas. Right? You're leaving it up to local control, so I think that's appropriate. I do have a very specific question. If I could turn your attention to page 6, line 20. Or 19, I'm sorry. Representative Tilbury, what is the justification for going from 500,000 to 1.4 million? What was the base year used? What was the growth factor used? How did we go from half a million to $1.4 million as the floor?
Representative Tilbury.
Madam Chair, Representative Biskins, we took that number from a testifier during our work group that was sitting alongside the Department of Ed and then another testifier at that point. And they determined the number, and they felt that there was enough justification to have that particular number to reach today's dollars, is what we were told. So we took their input and went with that figure, knowing that the stakeholders that had any type of concerns about it were okay with that number.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, Representative Tilbury, and maybe a member of staff, if you have any information that led to that number, I'll defer needing to know until this bill is heard in Finance Committee, where I also sit.
Mr. Dean, do you want to give us some information? We could take it. Are you the person that was sitting beside the Department of Education?
Madam Chair, I wasn't, but I know how they came up with the number. We asked...
And if you could identify...
My name is Tom Deans. I'm legal counsel for the School Board Association. What we did is we asked Ellerson Associates, who is a fiscal consultant, to run the inflation numbers from when the review and comment statute was adopted in 1975. At that time, the number was 400,000. We asked them to run the number, run inflation on that from 1975 to today, and the number came out to 1.4, or just about rounded to right around 1.4 million.
Very good. Thank you very much. And Scripps and Biskins, if you want to follow up with staff, if they have any other information, you can, and otherwise we'll take it to
Madam Chair, I think I got the information. Thank you, Madam Chair. I think I got the information that I needed. 1975 was the base, 400,000 was the base, and we run our CPI from that. Thanks, Madam Chair.
Thank you. And Representative McFarland, you are the final questioner, and then we'll hear from Mr. Campbell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I also thank you for all the work you've put into this. My first question is about the Safe Schools Levy, specifically on the top of page 9. When we talk about the district's full-time equivalent is not less than the numbers from the previous year, I'm just wondering if the working group had any discussion about districts that are in declining enrollment.
Representative Kilberry.
Madam Chair, Representative McFarland, that is one of the reasons why we came up with the language that we did. We have to understand that student support services, whenever they come up with budget cuts, declining enrollment, or whatever, they're the first to go.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that that's kind of clear, and that is why there's such a movement to make sure that our kids are taken care of. And so that was what the work group really went through, and that's why the language allowed some flexibility.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
McFarland,
I appreciate that you discussed that. And, the other part is on page 3, section 3, when you talk about the reporting to the public. Had you thought about maybe adding something about and upon request from the superintendent's office so somebody could get it in written form versus the web, since not everybody is on the Internet?
Representative Kilberry.
Madam Chair, Representative McFarland, we did talk about that at length when we were talking with this, but we wanted to make sure that the publishing community also was on board with this particular language, and this is what they were on board with. And so I think that's, we used the language that they had also used possibly in Representative Lanning's work on his mandate bill. And so we wanted to make sure we matched up with that.
And Madam Chair, I guess I'm not saying that we're taking away from publishing in the paper. I'm just saying in the newspaper that they could refer to that if they would like, they could get a copy from the superintendent's office in writing. Because my point is that not everybody is on the Internet. And if you're saying that you either have to go to the Internet to look at the school report card or you have to go onto the website to find this information, that maybe referring to at least the address of the superintendent's office might be.
Ms. Schwab, if you want to identify yourself, it looks like Kelleher, I'm sorry, if you're anxious to contribute to this question.
Madam Chairman and committee members, Grace Kelleher with the Minnesota School Boards Association. That information, Representative McFarland, to answer your question, anyone who comes into the school district office, we provide that information free of charge to them. So that's already provided for in the law, and this does nothing to change that requirement.
Very good. Representative McFarland, is that your last question?
I just wanted, Madam Chair, to comment that I just want all of our information to be as user-friendly as possible to the general public, so they don't necessarily always have to look at what's in law, but what's right there in front of them.
Thank you very much. And again, this is a dynamic process, so that takes us through the legislators. Mr. Campbell has indicated through motioning that he's here as a resource. He doesn't need to testify. Is there anyone in the audience who would like to testify for or against the bill? Okay, then we'll go to amendments. And we will take Representative Kilberry's amendment first. So now, this is not a technical amendment.
Yes, Madam Chair.
You may move it, Representative Kilberry.
Yes, it's H0920A4 amendment.
Representative Kilberry moves the H0920A4 amendment. Representative Kilberry.
It is technical in nature at the top, like you had said earlier.
Yeah, that's all I was looking at before.
And then there's a couple of word changes down at the bottom that do change some of this aspect. And it's really a sense of when a person comes in and requests information that there's separating the what's available to the public versus private information, like let's just say an IEP, for example. That was something that a school district has to go through, and they would like to recoup their losses on that. The biggest example I think you could get would be if a news team decided to come in and said, we need all of your IEPs for the last year. Well, that's an incredible amount of work for the staff to come up with cutting out private pieces. And so this is something that, and remember the piece that it has to be is reasonable, a reasonable charge for that. And so I'm hoping that this is the type of language that could help the school district out.
Questions on the amendment?
Representative
Benson.
Just a quick note on that line of changes on 1.25. Might the word non-public data be better than not public data on that sentence?
Mr. Strom.
Madam Chair, I'll refer to others on this, but the data privacy law makes some very specific distinctions between these various categories of data, and that's one of the categories they have. So I would urge you not to make it read better by changing that one.
Those of us who have not served on the Data Practices Committee know enough not to monkey with their stuff.
I was just putting up my English language usage book. I'm sorry.
Any testimony on this amendment? There is, and then I'll go to Representative Marianian. Welcome, and if you could identify yourself.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Sandy Naren. I'm with Nesserly and Kramer, and I'm here today on behalf of the Minnesota Newspaper Association. This amendment, which I just saw for the first time when I came here, is a very, very significant change to the Minnesota Data Practices Act. This language has been in law for 30 years, and it has been the compromise that has been crafted. It does permit the current law does permit local governments to charge for paying the actual cost of searching for, retrieving data, the actual cost of copying it and everything. But the law for a long time has said that they cannot charge for separating public from private data. And there are very good reasons why that has been in law for a very, very long time. So I do encourage you not to put this on the bill at this point. This is a very, very major policy change and probably should be looked at in the Civil Justice Committee, who has jurisdiction of major changes to the Data Practices Act.
Thank you. Why don't you stay right there for just a second in case Representative Mariani's question relates to something we might want to have you up there for. Representative Mariani.
Well, Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, I still wait for the next testifier, then I can ask my question.
Okay, very good. All right. Welcome, Mr. Schneiderman, if you could identify yourself.
Madam Chair, my name is Kirk Schneiderman. I'm on staff with the Minnesota School Board Association, and this is an issue that I think was framed under the situation that we're presently in, and we're looking at ways for districts to be paid for some of the costs that they incur when these large requests for data occur. And I think there's two examples. When we saw last year when we had some the press were asking for data from a number of school districts on special ed IEPs. Districts had to go through all of the IEPs and redact all of the educational data and personal data from those IEPs, as well as a situation when you may have a school closing, when someone may request all the information that's shared between administration and board on the closing of a public school. And what districts are going to have to do is go back and search for those emails and also redact all that information out, hire lawyers to make sure that they've done it correctly. And so all we're asking for is to be able to charge back those costs so that our personnel spend the time from redacting that information. And that's the purpose we're asking for, because presently we're not able to do that.
Thank you. Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I have a possible question, but also a substantive content question, I suppose. And maybe I'll start with the easier one. First, which is really a process question. This is for you, Representative Stillberry. I frankly don't know what this means. I've been here a long time to know that when you get into data privacy stuff, that's usually the sense for most of us, that we don't know what this stuff means, and it often leads into a potentially incredibly complex set of discussions here. And so therefore, much of what we have, my understanding, in our data privacy laws result from some very long deliberations and some pretty hard fought out compromises that balance some pretty important issues relative to the public's right to know in general, relative to our own sense of maintaining data privacy. But I guess my question first is, I guess I would have preferred to have seen this in our committee, in the policy committee, and if you were my chief, you would also, or what precipitated, or what changed between the hearing of this in the committee and now that requires us to attempt to vet this out in the finance committee?
Representative Tilbury.
Madam Chair, Representative Mariani, this should have been in your policy, and it was planned to be there. Prior to your committee meeting, we had people coming around right when I was going to sit down and talk about our bill, because this was one of the first things that the work group had put on their list to really look at, and it wasn't there, and conversation with health staff, they thought that this was covered in another part of the bill. And so then we just continued on with our bill, and then at the end, after everything was accomplished, we realized we missed one that we thought was supposed to be done. And I remember talking about it today, saying, what exactly does this mean? And asking several people, either on staff and others, to explain it to me also, so I could try to deliver it today. So that is where we're at today.
Representative
Mariani.
And you and I have served together for a number of years, so I absolutely know your dutifulness and diligence and respect your honest approach to legislating. I myself yesterday made a error that I needed to humble myself afterwards, because I missed one word in a bill that I had, and I misrepresented that conference. I know how that can easily happen. My question is for Ms. Nairn. My sense is that, but this is just a sense, that by this change, this might produce some kind of a chilling effect on information that folks may have some very legitimate reasons to get at. Mm-hmm. And I'm almost afraid to ask this, because I don't want to, and the chair will throw a book at me, we don't have 2 hours to get into it, but am I right, and what can you tell us? I mean, I thought you were very judicious with your testimony here, and I sense that you could easily get it, you know, encourage us to vet this further, but you were being very minimalist in your advice to us. Am I correct, generally speaking, that, you know, there's something here that might, in fact, get in the way of important information that people really ought to have access to? Because if now they have to pay for lawyers and all sorts of incredibly phenomenal stuff.
Ms. Nairn. Madam Chair, Representative Mariani, I think you've hit the nail on the head, and that's why this has been such a contentious issue in data privacy committees in the past over the last 30 years. This provision, by the way, does not just impact schools. This impacts all local units of government. You are changing the generic data privacy law here, not just for schools, but for cities, counties, and townships, and everyone. So this is a fairly all-encompassing change. And the main people you're going to be impacting with this change are your constituents. The newspapers are very small requesters of public data. It's usually your constituents who go into the schools and the cities and counties and try and get copies of public documents. And this balance has been put in the law. It permits them to charge for searching for retrieving it, for the cost of employee time. But we've always wanted to encourage local governments to keep public data separate from private data so that they can't charge. I'm sure that if I had more time to look into it, I could bring you some horror stories of what people have been charged in the past for this line item. So I do encourage you to be cautious about this, because it is a very all-encompassing provision of the Data Practices Act.
Madam Chair, very quickly, I'm not at all unempathetic to Representative Tilbury's effort here. I can also easily see where this might, in fact, be something that you know, could generate some substantial savings, depending on a case-by-case basis. But I think there's some very delicate balances here that this raises to the fore for us to carefully consider.
Thank you. And, members, we have a half an hour left. We have two other amendments. I'm sure that Representative Mariani is going to be interested in script, and Dietrich's amendment, too, and why didn't that come up in your committee? But as I said, this is a dynamic process, and so we have these things to continue on. Representative Tilbury, we have, I'm guessing that the Labor Day one, we all kind of know that issue, so we'll take some testimony, but we won't have to take as long on that, since we had a lot of testimony on that, two different days in Representative Mariani's committee. We have 5 members that still want to comment on this amendment, and then we have Representative Dietrich's amendment. So I think what I will do is try to start about 5 after with the Labor Day amendment and about 5-2 with Representative Dietrich's amendment. Take 10 more minutes on this one. I sit next to Representative Mullery on the House floor, and I am just almost certain that if this amendment's in there, this bill is going to go there as one of its stops before we get done. So we'll keep that in mind, and as we go along, and you can decide what you want to do with the amendment. But I'm going to give up to 10 more minutes to keep going through the questions. Representative Tilbury.
Madam Chair, I can make it easier than that. I think that what you've experienced right here was a little bit of what the work group had to wrestle with all the mandates. And so when Representative Garofalo said we cut out all the controversial ones, not necessarily. This is just to have a little reminder of what this kind of but I'm going to make it easy and withdraw the amendment.
Thank you, Representative Tilbury. It sounds like it could be a bill in of itself for next session if someone wants to tackle this, because it does sound like a real issue for the school districts. And we, and as you mentioned, we can hear the side that Ms. Niren is talking about as well. So thank you again for the work on your committee. We did see what you were up against. All right. Then, yes, Representative Dietrich, if you would like to move your amendment.
Yes, I would, Madam Chair. Thank you. I would like to move the A7 amendment.
Representative Dietrich moves the A7 amendment. Representative Dietrich.
Thank you. First of all, I'll explain what this amendment does. In my opinion, at least, it belongs in the mandate reduction still. And the reason that it did not get heard in policy is because I was not in policy the day that we heard the mandate reduction bill. So this is the first time that I've heard this bill. So I do apologize to that. But this is a mandate that makes sense to me. And what it does is it delays the revisions, review, and implementation of standards for art, science, social studies, language arts by 1 year. And I want to be really clear, it does not tinker with the math standards and delay any sort of implementation of the math standards. The reason for this amendment is that this was brought forward as a suggestion by the members of the Anoka Hennepin School Board. And they brought it forth saying that, obviously, like other school districts, they are facing a deficit. $15 million the first year of the biennium, second year, $25 million. They are very committed to working on the revised math standards and getting all kids to Algebra 1 and Algebra 2 standards. And they feel like that is a very big job, but they are committed and focused on that, and they would like to continue to be committed and focused on the math standards. But obviously, even implementing the math standards costs money. It's staff development time, it is teacher time, it is administrative time. And so what they have asked for is some sort of a moratorium on implementing standards. And so as, actually I think that they have asked for like a 5-year type moratorium. And what I did was I took the more moderate approach, being the moderate that I am, and I did not touch the math standards, and I thought a 1-year delay in implementation would actually save time and energy and allow the Department of Education and all the school districts throughout the state to take a little bit more breathing room, get caught up on the math standards, and just delay the rest of those by 1 year. And so that's what my amendment does. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Members. Representative
Biskin. Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Dietrich, I have no real concern here, but I do want to know, have you spoken to the department and stay supportive of this?
Representative Dietrich. Thank you, Representative Biskin. That does remind me that, yes, when my school district first came to me and asked for some sort of a moratorium on new standards, I did talk to them, and I said, you know, I've looked at your review schedule, and it would seem to me like if we would take art, social studies, language arts, and delays, those would make sense, but I did not include science. And so, but on this amendment, I do have science included. So I have not double-checked on the science piece. But they were open to the concept, especially on those three subject areas.
Is there anyone from the department that could come and tell us about the opinion of the department as much as you know? Maybe seeing the amendment here and talking to Representative Dietrich. Welcome.
Thank you, Chair and Representatives of the Committee. My name is Lisa Barnes. I am with the Department of Education. And actually, all that I can say to this amendment at this point is that, you know, we are moving forward with our standards, and even in the policy, the department bill, which will hopefully be heard in Representative Mariani's committee next year, getting ready to align our tests as well with the implementation of the new standards. So I was not in the conversations that Representative Dietrich did have with the department, but from what I do know is we're moving forward to, and we do find it important to keep up with our standards and moving forward with rigorous academic curriculum for the students. So I can go back and ask, but I would just like to say that it is important that we continue updating our standards. I think a one-year delay might be possible, but.
Okay, there are three legislators on the list. Do you all have questions for Ms. Barnage? Otherwise, I'll take whoever does. No. Okay, Representative Biskin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, Madam Chair, not hearing any statement of opposition or support for this amendment, my question to you, Madam Chair, is what is the motion again on this bill?
Representative Biskin, the motion is to lay it to have it be for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. So if we should put this amendment on today, and then we find out that they're not neutral and they don't like it, we can always not include it in the omnibus bill.
Madam Chair, with that, thank you, Madam Chair. With that assurance, then I would support the Dietrich amendment.
Thank you very much, Representative Garofalo.
I didn't know I raised my hand.
Representative Ward.
Sorry.
It must have been that pulling on the ear like Representative Mariani was doing yesterday. Representative Ward.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a couple quick questions, I think. And you might have already said this, but I was trying to read the amendment while you were talking, too, so I might have missed it, and I apologize if I did. Did you talk about other cost savings to districts on this? And secondly, I thought I heard you say that the Anoka Hennepin, the same from Anoka Hennepin, I thought for some or an individual district. Can you tell us if districts throughout the state of Minnesota also would you know if they would this be widely accepted? I'm assuming it would, but would you know if it would be widely accepted around the state of Minnesota?
Representative Dietrich. Thank you, Madam Chair. What was your first question? Representative Ward.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If you know of any the amount of cost savings to districts at all,
Madam Chair and Representative Ward. I forgot what the chair of our school board said that it was costing him a year to the school district to implement the math standards, what they were spending a year. But I thought, and maybe Representative Newton being on the board more recently than I, that it was at least $1 million a year.
Mm-hmm.
Newton.
Excuse me, Madam Chair. It was $3 million for the math.
Representative Dietrich, Representative Ward. So I can't say, our school district probably is 40,000 students, so I can't say what it would be throughout the school district, the state, but I would guess there are some cost savings. All right, Representative Deputy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Dietrich, I thought you said it didn't include the math standards in your amendment.
Representative Dietrich. You are right. I was just giving that as an example. And I'm sorry that I didn't give Representative Ward the follow-up that he was asking for. Representative Ward.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And then just my second question was, if other districts statewide would be on board with this? And I'm assuming they would. Can you tell us that?
Representative Dietrich. Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Ward. I have not asked districts statewide. But I have checked with the department, and I have checked with my school district, and they at least
as I clarified before, I haven't checked with the science standards, but they all seem on board. And Representative Ward, we have lots of ears in the room, and if they don't like it, I bet you we're going to hear about it. Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair, I'm almost afraid to say anything because apparently I'm momentarily famous on talk radio for, you know, just lowering standards in the state of Minnesota now. And so, you know, I hate to comment on this because, you know, maybe that'll get me on TV then. But it seems to me that, incidentally, there'd be savings to the department here because of the, you know, having to put off for another year, you know, deploying their staff to do that. And that might be of interest to you, Madam Chair. It is too bad we couldn't talk about this in policy, but I certainly understand. I think what we probably would have heard in policy is the discussion of a level of angst that a number of members do have on both sides of the aisle about whether or not our revision cycles aren't too tight, and therefore creating, so just from a policy perspective and perhaps even from a mandate, you know, perspective in terms of what's expected of our school districts, that there's some sense anyway that we're turning these, at least in recent history, we've gone through a unique period of time in the last decade, that we're turning around these standards perhaps too quickly and too tightly, and that schools and instructors and frankly students, which goes to the math issue here, you know, are not allowed the time to be able to intelligently scope and sequence, you know, practice throughout the continuum of K-12. So it seems to me that, you know, Representative Dietrich, there's if that's true, there's some other potential benefit here in terms of, you know, perhaps allowing a little bit more time in this unusual period that we've been in a decade in Minnesota with new standards to allow, you know, perhaps for kind of more intelligent scope and sequencing time.
It sounds like with, as much as we know, we're open to it, and if we find out more, Representative Dietrich can work with others, and Representative Mariani, if your policy committee, you know, gives us better advice after you've had a chance to consider it and talk to folks, we're open to that as well. Any final statement, Representative Dietrich?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I would just like to also let you know that I did talk to Representative Tilbury, and he was not opposed to having the amendment in his bill. And once again, I did talk to the department. And the one cost savings that I did forget to mention, this is a temporary cost savings. It isn't a solution to, you know, the next 20 years. This is definitely a reaction to the economic conditions that we find ourselves in right now. And the other, so to that point, curriculum purchasing could be a cost savings also, short term.
Thank you. And Representative Tilbury, any comment before we vote?
Yes, Madam Chair, just that just because it didn't make our work group doesn't necessarily mean that it, because these mandates are in a state of flux. I mean, we gathered all kinds of mandates, but this one wasn't brought to our attention. But had it been, we would have talked about it, and we would have had public testimony on it. And I think that if we look at our first charge, would it be savings to the districts? That would help us.
Very good. Any other testimony from the audience on the amendment? Okay, Representative Deputy, you get the final word.
Oh, thank you very much, Madam Chair. I'm hoping that, having been a member of the work group, that we can still vet this out. I mean, I think it's very important that we do have testimony on this. And I appreciate Representative Dietrich bringing this up to our attention, but I would hope that it has the same vetting process that we did on the other mandate.
Thank you very much. And we did ask people now, but of course they haven't had a chance to think about it. So if we do have people that we hope they'll get it, put them to us in writing, and if this should go forward in the omnibus bill, and we need to hear from people when we're marking up the bill, because we didn't have this one through the work group, we'll keep an open mind to that as well. All right. Representative Dietrich renews her motion for the A7 amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes, and the amendment is adopted. And the final amendment, Representative Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'm happy to call A6 amendment.
Representative Benson moves the A6 amendment. Representative Benson.
And I'm happy to speak in favor of this amendment. I always like to discuss non-controversial amendments. And I know it's non-controversial because I remember over the last 2 years hearing almost unanimously whether members of this House were Republicans or Democrats, all speaking in favor of local control. And this is another local control issue involving the elimination of a non-essential mandate establishing a start date for schools, in this case later day start. And we have heard testimony before in other committees concerning this bill, and I will repeat very briefly because of time one or two of them. One of them is that since we all agree in supporting local control of schools, this amendment moves us in that direction. Also, there has been no convincing evidence that this mandate, if it were removed, would hurt resorts, 4-H, or other activities, economic activities in the state. Since this is a voluntary amendment, it is not required to set a particular state state start date. That is left to the local communities. I attended Austin schools, which is very was and I'm sure still is very involved in the 4-H program, and I can't imagine that any school district like Austin Public Schools would deny their young people the flexibility to attend, for example, the state fair. Also, just another note, this allows school districts, if they choose, to begin school a little earlier. And we all know, those of us who've taught many years, that kids are much more focused in the fall than they are in the spring. Spring is quite a time, especially if you're teaching seniors or ninth graders or eighth graders in a hot, non-air-conditioned classroom. So, as far as another issue, and that'll be the last one I'll bring up here at the moment, having to do with the question of disposable income, I think families are quite capable of deciding how to spend disposable income at any time during the year, whether it's in the spring or the fall. So I strongly urge the committee to include this this amendment, which will lead to local control and the reduction of another state, unnecessary in this case, state mandate on schools.
Thank you very much. How many in the audience want to testify on this bill so we know how to gauge our time? 1, 2, 3. Okay. We'll take then 3 legislators and then 3 lobbyists and then we'll vote. Representative Garofalo, Ward, and Swales, and then you can see if 6 people and we've got 12 minutes. So don't take your time. Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
You get one question this
time. Yeah, well, Representative Tilbury, Representative Benson, I know I'm going to lose on this vote today, and, you know, that's fine. But if I just offer a suggestion, since the Finance Committee kicked this out, the word has kind of gotten out and people are approving their calendars. I know what it means to us, but if you pass this amendment today as it exists, school boards are going to think that this is really going to be back on the table for 9 and 10 for this year. Now, we can debate what's going to happen in the Finance Committee next time it goes there, but this bill is not going to be in finance until at its earliest mid to late April. So I would just friendly suggestion to you, just take the 9 and the 10 out of there so it applies to 10 and 11. Just by the time, if this were to become law, school districts aren't going to be able to pass the calendar for this year anyways. Because we're talking, assuming the bill passes out, the Senate concurs, and we pass the bill in May, people have already approved their calendars by then. This is just going to freak people out. So just a suggestion.
Thank you. And we're going to hear from the School Board Association, so we'll hear what they say about your suggestion. Representative Ward.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will try to be brief. Representative Benson, I want to clarify a few things with you. This really isn't about educating. I don't think anybody on this committee would be supporting anything that is anti-education or anti-kids. I mentioned last time about the year-round calendar that's happening in Rochester, that is something that eventually we need to look at. This is about economic time. This is about economic trouble that many areas are in the state of Minnesota, but in particular, we have a, in my district, we have a 12.6 or 8% unemployment rate right now. This impacts local economy significantly, and you said you have not heard anything to verify the loss of evidence. I'm holding in my hand a letter from Tom Cavanaugh, who owns Cavanaugh Resort. Some of you have probably heard of Cavanaugh's Resort or the Cavanaughs. And Tom Cavanaugh says, not only will this push back the start of, this will also push back, move the fall sports start date, which will also impact the economy for our local businesses, our hotels, our restaurants. Cavanaughs themselves, as they have been in business for over 40 years, have gone through this before when the start date has been pre-Labor Day. And he estimates that he will lose, in his resort, $70,000 to $90,000 or 7.5% of their business. In a time when we cannot lose any more dollars in the state of Minnesota, any more jobs or anything else. So this is truly about economic help for our small businesses, and for the state fair as well, who I think in an article in one of the papers recently, after it came out of finance, was shown to have significant financial loss in the state of Minnesota, along with some job loss and things like that as well. So this is about economic loss in the state of Minnesota.
Thank you, Representative Whale.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I think I want to respond to Representative Ward
very briefly because we have three testifiers.
Yes, ma'am. I'm getting there.
Okay, good.
I just want to say that sacred cows move very loudly, and if there were ever a time for us to experiment with a way to improve or to actually see if there is a loss to the resort industry, we could go with what Representative Garofalo suggested. Let's eliminate the 09 and 10 school year and just look at what is the resort industry doing. I think that might be a reasonable solution. The other sacred cow is the state fair. Why does it have to end on Labor Day? Why couldn't we move it forward in the future a week earlier so that we're still getting the harvest? I mean, those are questions we should be asking. We've been asked to think outside the box. Sacred cows are sacred cows.
Thank you very much. We're going to take the three testifiers, and I think we might be out of time, but if we have time, we'll go back to the bill, the amendment author. Mr. Carlson, did you have your hand up? And if the others can come up so we don't have to wait, because we do end on time, there's another committee that comes in here. And each of you have about a minute, minute and a half.
Thank you, Madam Chairman and members. My name is Joel Carlson. I own a legal research and government affairs business, and I'm here to once again have a chance to talk about the post-Labor Day school start amendment. You know, I was in Representative Mariani's policy committee when they talked about this amendment. They specifically told us they were not going to add this to Representative Tilbury's bill, that they were going to handle that as a separate issue. And I think one of the reasons they didn't is that it's not consistent with your mandate goals. It doesn't deal with money. It doesn't have contract issues. It doesn't improve education. And I thought that we weren't going to deal with that in this bill. I actually kind of wished Representative Tilbury's data practices amendment would have gone on, because then we could have seen Representative Mulery, and I do a lot more work in there. I know my vote's a little better there, but this clearly has a dramatic impact on family-owned resorts. We surveyed our members in preparation for the Finance Committee, and we are talking about up to a 60% reduction in guests when you compare the last year that it started before Labor Day to the year following. 60% of guests. The last 2 weeks for the summer are the make-or-break time for resorts. This has a dramatic impact on them, and this will definitely further the economic problems that we have. The Dietrich Amendment had something to do with we're doing this over the economic times. This has a hardcore economic impact on small resorts, and it will have an impact right now.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Mr. Bagnoli.
Madam Chair, Joe Bagnoli with McGrand Shea Law Firm on behalf of the State Agricultural Society, better known as the State Fair. I'm just sitting here to echo what Mr. Carlson said and to urge you to not support this amendment.
Thank you very much, Mr. Tite.
Charlie Kite with the Minnesota Association of School Administrators. We speak for this amendment. You've heard all the arguments before. I just would like to make a couple of quick points. I just listened to President Obama in the last few days saying, it's about time we have a longer school year. This isn't about Labor Day start or after Labor Day start. It's time for our resorts and our farm corporations to get on board, along with our Chamber of Commerce, and get up here and say, we should start earlier, 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 and we should go later, and we should have longer days. That's the argument that we should be having. It's time that we recognize that we need to have our kids in school more if we're going to be competitive. And you know what? Some folks are going to have to change their business models to make that work. One point I would make is that changing these dates does not affect the start time for sports. Most middle school and high school families have already checked out of the resorts, and they're back in their towns ready for their kids to be at sports, and that happens at a set date, not dependent on this decision. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Schneiderwin.
Madam Chair, my name is Kirk Schneiderwin on behalf of the Minnesota School Board Association and representing all 338 public school districts in the state, and this is, to us, is a matter of choice. And this doesn't require anybody to start before or after. It's whatever fits their community needs. You've heard the arguments. We have a membership adopted position, and if they don't want to start after Labor Day, they don't have to, and if they want to, they certainly can do that. And I think it's pretty clear cut, and we understand the economic conditions. And we understand the challenge that goes along with that, but we just think that our local school boards, based on their community needs and student needs, should be able to make that decision.
Thank you very much, Representative Benson, and then Representative Chilberry, and then we'll vote, and then we'll don't go members right after that. We have to still approve the minutes. Representative Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and to garner support from this committee, I would just say please support the amendment.
Thank you very much, Representative Chilberry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to be noted that I'm kind of in an awkward position with the work group as we discussed this, and we chose to avoid this issue and avoid this discussion, and here it is today on this show. I don't have any, I'm going to stay incredibly neutral on it, Madam Chair.
Yeah. Thank you very much, except for your All right, Representative Benson renews his motion to approve the A6 amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
And opposed?
No.
The amendment is adopted. Thank you, Representative Kilberry. Your bill, House File 920, will be laid over for possible, as amended, will be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Thank you very much to you and your work group. Good work. Now, Representative Newton, what about the minutes of March 11th?
I move that we approve the minutes.
Representative Newton moves that we approve the minutes of March 11th. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The minutes are approved and the meeting is adjourned. Oh,
and Chair, do you have any goals for the bonding?
Oh, I do. Wait, Amber. Oh, I didn't bring it with me. Do you have it?
No.
We're doing adjourned.
Okay. All right. Well, we're not quite adjourned. I didn't pound the gavel. Oh. And we have two more minutes. I didn't bring the vote tally, so I apologize for that. Ms. Mandelman tallied it up, gave it to me, and I have it in my folder, which, of course, is sitting in my office. But I do remember the actual first, second, and third, and so forth. I can't give you the vote tallies, and if you want those, I can bring them next week. But we had four people who did not vote. They did not think there should be a bonding bill, and to those four people, that's actually how I voted in our caucus. But since I didn't prevail, I chose to vote on this one. I always think if you don't prevail, still make choices as you go along. So, but four people didn't make any choices. But number one on the choice list was the project from Faribault, the Academy for the Dormitory, so that more students could go there, and they didn't have room, though, in the dormitory. Number two was the Red Lake project to complete the high school, middle school work at Red Lake. And then tied for number three, the other two actually ironically tied, and that was the second project at Faribault for the thermal heating, and then Representative Falksville for the energy project in his district. So that's how it came out. Thank you for reminding me, Representative McFarland. And now the meeting is adjourned.